The priest's richer, deeper voice chased the thief-maker's objection right back down his throat. I'm sure you recall charging me everything but my dead mother's kneecaps for her. I should have paid you in copper and watched you spring a rupture trying to haul it all away. Ah, but she was special. And this boy, he's special too, said the thief-maker. Everything you asked me to look for after I sold you Carlo and Galdo. Everything you liked so much about Sabitha. He's Camori, but a mongrel. Therin and Vadron blood with neither dominant. He's got larceny in his heart, sure as the sea's full of fish piss. And I can even let you have him at a discount. The eyeless priest spent a long moment mulling this. You'll pardon me, he finally said, if the suggestion that the minuscule black turnip you call a heart is suddenly overflowing with generosity toward me leaves me wanting to arm myself and put my back against a wall. The thief-maker tried to let a vaguely sincere expression scurry onto his face, where it froze in evident discomfort. His shrug was theatrically casual. There are problems with the boy, yes. But the problems are unique to his situation in my care. Were he under yours, I'm sure they would vanish. Oh, you have a magic boy. Why didn't you say so? The priest scratched his forehead beneath the white silk blindfold that covered his eyes. Magnificent! I'll plant him in the fucking ground and grow a vine to an enchanted land beyond the clouds. Ah, I've tasted that flavor of sarcasm before, Chains. The thief-maker gave an arthritic mock bow. That's the sort you spit out as a bargaining posture. Is it really so hard to say that you're interested? The eyeless priest shrugged. Suppose Carlo, Galdo, and Sabitha might be able to use a new playmate, or at least a new punching bag. Suppose I'm willing to spend about 3 coppers and a bowl of piss for a mystery boy. But you'll still need to convince me that you deserve the bowl of piss. What's the boy's problem? His problem, said the thief-maker, is that if I can't sell him to you, I'm going to have to slit his throat and throw him in the bay. And I'm going to have to do it tonight. 2. On the night the Lamora boy had come to live under the thief-maker's care, the old graveyard on Shades Hill had been full of children, standing at silent attention and waiting for their new brothers and sisters to be led down into the mausoleums. The thief-maker's wards all carried candles. Their cold blue light shone through the silver curtains of river mist as street lamps might glimmer through a smoke-grimed window. A chain of ghost light wound its way down from the hilltop, through the stone markers and ceremonial paths, down to the wide glass bridge over the coal smoke canal, half visible in the blood-warm fog that seeps up from Camor's wet bones on summer nights.
Come now, my loves, my jewels, my newly founds, keep the pace, whispered the thief-maker as he nudged the last of the 30 or so catchfire orphans over the coal smoke bridge. These lights are just your new friends, come to guide your way up the hill. Move now, my treasures. There's darkness wasting, and we have so much to talk about.
In rare moments of vain reflection, the thief-maker thought of himself as an artist, a sculptor, to be precise, with orphans as his clay and the old graveyard on Shades Hill as his studio. 88,000 souls generated a certain steady volume of waste. This waste included a constant trickle of lost, useless, and abandoned children. Slavers took some of them, hauling them off to Tal Verar or the Jeremite Islands. Slavery was technically illegal in Camor, of course, but the act of enslavement itself was winked at, if there was no one left to speak for the victim.